Before I phone Cutler, kicking off the last hour here. Hour number two, pretty damn interesting. Had a good time. Real good time. Hour number one, had a better time. Let's see what hour number three's got hooked up. We got Casey Gray on the lane right now. But I'm going to ask the reader lady to introduce him. So here we go.
Guest preview. Veteran Casey Gray will talk about his upcoming bid for Congress in California and the recent terrorist attacks on American soil, how our government is failing us, and what we can do about it. Casey will also speak from personal experience about the horrific treatment of veterans in this country. Twitter, at CL Gray Congress.
There you go. And there's the man. Casey, how you doing, man?
Good, Boone. How you doing today?
I've been better, been worse, man. It's good to have you on the radio. Good to have you on the phone. Good to talk to you. It's about time America understands a little bit more about what's going on, and I'm guessing you're the guy that's going to tell them.
Definitely get into that.
Outstanding. And where do you want to start with this, man? I got a whole list of things here. It's a little bit scattered. We're going to talk about terrorist attacks. We're going to talk about your bid for Congress in California. We're going to talk about veterans. Where do you want to start with this?
Well, I guess we could start with the most recent, with this recent terrorist attack here, you know, about 30 minutes away from my home in San Bernardino.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about it, man. Do you think we were just talking about on the break, and here's what I said. I said, okay, they got two people. Where's the rest of that cell?
Yeah, and that's, you know, this is something that I have personal connections here with the FBI, and I've spoke to them about the issues, and, you know, they've told me anything that you see on the news is going to be correct. It's going to give due process to the people that are accused, and they've been very slow to call it an act of terrorism, but they have done so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have respect for that. I'm a very big constitutionalist. I believe our Constitution is a blueprint. It's not a recommendation. And we need to follow that. And if you're familiar with the Constitution, every citizen is given due process. You know, if you're accused of a crime, you're given the due process. They go through, they investigate the evidence, and then they can come down with indict you. They can have the facts laid out, and I believe the FBI did a great job of that. You know, on the other hand, there were people that came out before there was any evidence presented, before they knew what was going on. And one person in particular was Hillary Clinton. She came out right away and made a response that, you know, it was time to do something about the gun problem in the United States as soon as...
Blame the guns.
And, you know...
Yeah, unless it's a white guy, then you blame them because they're racist.
For the record, we got a couple of guns sitting here in studio, and they haven't harmed anybody.
Not any. But they will if the situation arises.
That was my immediate response on Twitter to Hillary was, you know, if she had been as quick to respond to Benghazi, she could have saved lives there. Today it was a bit late.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this gets into the guns itself specifically, but also it gets into the politics and the politics of our country, which are slowly eroding in its moral decay, which is destroying our company, or our country, which ultimately really is a company, it's a corporation. But what it gets down to is with these politics, people are more concerned about their personal image, their next step, getting elected, what exactly they can feed to the people of the United States. And when that happens, it's less about us. It's less about this country. It's less about what's important to us, and you get into political correctness. The problem with political correctness is, let's take, for instance, this specific terrorist attack. A neighbor was quoted to have said that they would have reported these two terrorists because they noticed suspicious activity. They did not do so because they were afraid
to be called racist.
Profiled them.
They were afraid to be called racist. They didn't want to deal with that.
Exactly.
They were socially neutered.
Well, and this comes into, you know, I'll bring up a contentious point here. We can talk about Donald Trump a little bit and some of the inflammatory comments he made, you know, regarding banning Muslims and stopping this, but until we can get a hold on what's going on in this country. Now, the problem with the political correctness part, and you bring up his comment, you know, there's going to be this fine line with such, I'll bring up a person in the White House administration, Valerie Jarrett. You know, these people, they want to separate, they want to put division, racial division. They want to separate our country out, and they want to put this political correctness in where people are afraid to make accusations. They're afraid to do investigations. There was currently a whistleblower from Department of Homeland Security. He came on and said that there was a very intensive program to vet these refugees that were coming in on emergency refugee status, on emergency visas. and on marriage visas, commonly referred to as fiancé visas, but they were breaking them down into categories, investigating them, and it just so happened the mosque these two terrorists were attending was part of that investigation. Well, the investigation was shut down, and the reason for it being shut down, once again, was political correctness. They told them that they couldn't be racially profiling these people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem with that specifically is, if you have a, I've made this comment several times to people, not every Muslim is a terrorist, but it just so happens to be of lately, every terrorist has been a Muslim. Now, this doesn't have to get into the fact, we don't have to point fingers here and say, like I said, not every Muslim is a terrorist, but when it comes down and breaks down into facts and you're categorizing terrorists, if they just so happen to be Muslims, then they can all be pointed back to, say, a mosque, such as in France, three mosques shut down with over 300 firearms seized in those mosques. Do we go back to the fact of religious freedom?
Do we put our head in the sand because we want to ignore facts? I think that's the issue. And okay, let's not talk about racial profiling. Why don't we talk about criminal profiling? And if there are certain factors that are evident, especially post-crime, okay, post-crime, not pre-crime, post-crime, and there are, the evidence points you in a direction, you have to go there. I don't care if you call it profiling. I don't care if you call it data collection. I don't care if you call it evidence gathering. It's the same thing.
I 100% agree with you, and that would take me back to the FBI. They're a nonpartisan, nonpolitical organization, and I think over time they've really proven their worth in doing serious investigations and bringing the facts out. And with our current administration, the FBI has brought down information specifically on Hillary Clinton and her illegal use of her emails, sending top secret and secret information through her personal servers. We have on one account.
And what happened to Petraeus, who did a hell of a lot less?
Yeah, you cut me off right there when I was saying his name, General Petraeus.
Yep.
An honorable man that, served our country. He gets prosecuted, which, I didn't see the man complain. He did the, if you will, did it.
He took the hit. He took the hit.
He did, just like an honorable gentleman. Now, on the other hand, Hillary, she covers it up with lies that are being covered up, uncovered. More, the FBI has pointed to this direction. And what the administration wants to do is take your eyes off this FBI investigation, which I'm sure could bring an indictment upon her, but they want to push it into back to political correctness. Oh, this is a partisan issue.
Word I hear is she's going to be indicted.
And, from what I limited information I know, and I like to wait till we get the facts out. But if you get back to the scientific theory, that we all learned back in junior high and high school, the theory here is strongly suggesting that it's more than a theory and it's starting to become a fact. So I would like to see that. I'd like to see the indictment if it truly is the issue with the email specifically. But I mean, we could get into this person. Specifically Hillary Clinton, look at Benghazi, look at the information, the families. There's been a lot more that's been uncovered and a lot more lies than just a trail of emails at this point. So when you talk about indictments, where do we even begin with that?
You want to hear my theory? WikiLeaks was really just the Clinton email server. They just had to find a way to put it out. Tipping Point, Boone Color, standby. We'll be right back with Casey Gray. And we're back with Casey Gray, a little bit of message there. And, can you put a price on peace? I have and I can. So is Casey. Casey, before we go any further, man, let's talk a little bit about your military service because we want to give respect to that, man. Tell us where you served, when you served, and how you served.
All right. I came in the U.S. Navy at the age of 17, served in Naval Special Warfare at Special Boat Teams on the East and West Coast, transitioned to the U.S. Naval Reserve, and while I was in the Navy, I did do two deployments with Special Boat Team 20, Naval Special Warfare Squadron 8, and Naval Special Warfare Squadron 10. Then on the West Coast, I did two deployments with Naval Special Warfare Squadron 5 and Naval Special Warfare Squadron 7. I transitioned to the U.S. Naval Reserves, and then I went to work for the U.S. State Department and the Central Intelligence Agency, working for the Global Response Staff. And I, while my time there, I did work for the deceased Ambassador Stevens. I transitioned from the Naval Reserves over to the U.S. Army Reserves at the Texas Army National Guard. and I was in a CH-47 helicopter crash while deployed with the National Guard, and subsequently I am 100% totally and permanently disabled and retired at this point.
So you cracked your melon, but you're still working through that, and you're still making, you do like I say. People say, hey, Boone, you're doing a great job. I say, I only do what I can. And when other people say, well, what should I do? I say, do what you can, but don't lie about it. Actually do what you can, not what you are comfortable with. Do you agree?
I totally agree. And, you know, I want to take a moment to thank you, actually. And, you know, I do have a traumatic brain injury, and you've come and helped me with that. You've put some points out, some thoughts out across to me, and, you know, I've had care at the Traumatic Brain Injury Clinic and Carrick Brain Center, the Cerebrum Health Center. And, you know, a lot of the things that you've helped me with have changed my life, my perspective on things, and I appreciate what you do for the veteran community.
Brother, it's all one team, and I do what I can. So let's go on with that. We talked a little bit about this other stuff. Where do you want to take this? You want to go into veteran causes or veteran issues right now?
Yeah, I would, and I think this is going to be something highly contentious that you might be interested in. I am considering running for Congress against Adam Schiff in the 28th Congressional District of Hollywood, California.
Right.
With that, I'd get into a few things, what my issues would be, why I'm running for Congress, and this is where it'll run into some veterans' issues. And, you know, a couple of those are going to be family law issues, dealing with the Family Protection Act of the Soldier Sailor Civil Relief Act and helping soldiers that have been and were deployed with families, you know, children predominantly. Then the difference between the VA and the VHA. And this is where the contentious part comes in. You know, there's the Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Health Administration. And one of my big points as running for Congress is going to be the economy. You know, without an economy, without money, without us properly running this country, you can't do much else.
That's
true. You got to have the money to keep a business running. And ultimately, our country is a business. The VA and the VHA are a very large part of that business. And coming from myself, you know, I was traumatically injured. I've had 20 surgeries. I just recently, 2 days ago, I had reconstructive shoulder surgery, had my clavicle reconstructed, my rotator cuff and my labrum repaired. So
that's sexy. Yeah. Is that the first time?
What's that?
Is that the first time you had that surgery?
No, this is my fifth shoulder surgery.
Yeah, see, I'm teaching America something here. Rarely do you have one shoulder. I've had two on my right side. And so when you start talking, you're talking about a slap repair and doing some stuff inside the joint there. I got that. Hey, America, when we talk about being injured, it's the gift that keeps on giving, but we keep giving back too. So just make that point. So thanks for coming on while you're recovering from your surgery. Tell me more about this finance stuff.
Yeah, and this is where, with these injuries, you know, when I was recalled to active duty in the military, was in this helicopter crash, and, you know, I had multiple orthopedic injuries. I was eventually transferred out to UCLA, where Operation Mend, the nonprofit, started paying for my surgeries because the military wouldn't.
Right.
It's really sad that a civilian nonprofit has to cover for a veteran's medical care because the military won't, especially when it's incurred on active duty. So I'm recovering from these things, getting these surgeries. Then I retire and, you know, go on terminal leave November 2014, effective retirement date January 4th, 2015. To date, Boone, I haven't been paid my U.S. military retirement.
Wow.
It has been over a year since I went on terminal leave. I haven't been paid. The VA refused to pay me for up until October. I had to get my congressman involved with a congressional investigation. I eventually started getting paid by the VA. My military retirement pay hasn't come through yet. And, you know, you can keep in mind the secondary, the tertiary issues of veterans not getting paid. You know, guys not getting money for a year. What are you supposed to do? You know, I personally saved up $15,000, you know, and about $5,000 a month in expenses that ran out in about March of 2015. And, you know, I was evicted from my home. I had cars repossessed. You know, I can tell you, I was sitting here counting pennies from a change jar to buy my son's lunch at his school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a super depressing thing. Like, here I am, have served 15 years combined, the U.S. government, and I can't afford to buy my son a lunch. It was just really crushing. And the issue was, if the military would have done and the VA would have done what they were supposed to, I should have been receiving my retirement pays February 1st, 2015 at the latest, and it wouldn't have been an issue. I could have lived my life. I wouldn't have had all those other issues. But what happens is we, the veterans, suffer. No one's going to fix my credit from them not paying me. No one's going to, you know, get me into a new home. You know, it's just a lifelong wrecking of problems that I covered family law issues. It almost cost me custody of my son. And it just...
And these are issues. I want everybody to listen. America, these are issues that are common, okay? This is not an anomaly here for what Casey's talking about, okay? I'm not trying to talk about myself, but just talking about myself. Also had custody issues, also had a vehicle repossessed, also VA, you know, cut off my pay for something like 8 months. We were in a bread line trying to eat. And didn't do anything wrong. Now try dealing with all that stuff when you have a traumatic brain injury. And God knows what else you got going on, and you're just trying to get your medical care squared away. It's unbelievable. And I see people on television, and they're arguing about this. I want free college. I want $15 an hour. Really? Really? Well, go get in line. Seriously, go get in line. Because there's people ahead of you that already paid a price, and they're trying to recoup what the deal already is, and you're trying to make a new deal with America? Are you kidding me? Really? You selfish bastards, every one of them.
Well, this goes back to... You know, you like to call them war fighters, soldiers. You know, we wrote a blank check for this country, and unfortunately some of our checks were cashed. You know, and if you asked me, I would tell you I wouldn't change one single
thing. I wouldn't change a damn thing, you know, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't change a damn thing because I believe I'm a better person for it. And, you know, I can take that pain, and I'll do it again just like you will, just like all the other war fighters, but that doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right. Tipping Point, Boone Color. Stand by to stand by. We'll be right back with Casey Gray. And we're back. Tipping Point, Boone Color. We're taking over this town, your town, my town, any town, USA, because we are the warfighter community and we are the leadership of this country. We are the samurai society. We get it done. We don't quit. We have no quit in our soul. We make it happen. We're on with Casey Gray getting ready to run for Congress in Los Angeles. I'm digging on that idea. I think more warfighters need to get involved. How's the campaign going now? Where are you at? You're just starting. You're trying to rally people up. Where are we with this thing? Because we're totally off book right now, man. Your segment was over like 5 minutes ago, but I want to know about your campaign.
Yeah, I have an exploratory committee that we started last year. I'm running against Adam Schiff here in the 28th Congressional District.
I think I know him. He's not a bad guy, but I mean, you can do something better, right?
Well, he's the guy that came on with the initial Benghazi hearing and called the whole Benghazi issue a red herring and said that it was a partisan issue, and him and Representative Issa.
Okay, I'm thinking of somebody else.
Someone else, because this guy...
Yeah, because that doesn't sound like somebody I would like.
No, you wouldn't. He's a career politician, career Democrat, and, you know, I don't mind. I love the two-party system, Democrat, Republican. There's some really great Democrats out there that represent veterans, and one of them being Julia Browley down in Ventura County. Great, great congresswoman. But, you know, Mr. Schiff, it's not the same. The guy has criticized veterans. He's quick to, you know... cover up for the misdeeds of the current administration for Hillary Clinton, and he's been the spokesman for them. He's been a career politician that needs to be removed from office, and it is going to be a David and Goliath race.
Yeah, I mean, I got to ask you. I mean, you really are. Let's break it down, man. Just warfighter to warfighter. This is an issue about principle. Truly, you're running on principle because you're in, I mean, that's the Hollywood is in that area. And then for people to know, Hollywood is an area in Los Angeles. It's not actually a thing. You know, it's what they call it. So, you know, you got the Hollywood folk and they're pretty anti-gun. I'm looking at a bunch of anti-2A stuff today on the news. And, I mean, these people are going to want to kick your ass.
Well, and this is what people don't understand about the districts. You know, you have about 708,000 people in a district. And in this district is West Hollywood, Burbank, Glendale, a piece of Pasadena, Sunland, La Cañada, Flint Ridge.
Okay, so you're gonna pull Sunland, La Cañada. What was the other? Pasadena. You'll pull Pasadena.
Glendale.
You're going to pull Glendale, Burbank. You'll pull Burbank too.
Yep. The other thing what people don't realize is Hollywood is the most saturated area for returning combat veterans. You know, you got one of the highest BAH payments in the.
Oh, Los Angeles has the largest veteran population in the country.
Exactly, and historically, what you have in voting, you have about 110,000, about 1/7 of your district to maybe 1/5 of your district, maybe upwards of 180 that vote. If we could get the warfighters to come out, the veterans, it would be plenty enough to get me elected in this district. But what we have to do is mobilize people to want to vote, to make a difference. A lot of people talk the talk, but when it comes down to voting, they don't get out and vote.
Mm.
They do a lot of Facebook criticizing. They talk a lot.
Yeah.
They don't get out and, you know, they don't support their representatives. They don't support their candidates.
They're too polarized on the national elections, not understanding that, you know, a whole bunch of, it's the sum of all the parts, not just one part.
Yeah, and you made a very clear and precise statement earlier that we need to get more veterans running for Congress. We have a very, very small amount of veterans represented in Congress, and we need to get more guys that are interested in this. You know, myself specifically, I'm retired, 100% totally and permanently disabled. I don't pay the taxes on my disability payments, and I really could just be fine going on and living my life. And
you know,
I am elected.
Oh, man. You know what? My wife and I have this conversation all the time. I say, honey, why don't I just stop? Why don't we just lay around, do nothing? I'll learn how to fish or something.
There you go.
You know, I'll learn how to do some gardening. And she laughs. She's like, yeah, you know. Because honestly, I got a call. I got a message this morning from a brother of ours. And I'm not sure if you know him, but he's out there in L.A. And he says, the rush. Do we ever stop missing it? And I said, I don't know. I pick fights on the radio once a week for 3 hours. And I think I do it for that reason, you know. Something else that we brought up, and I'm going to keep you on the line. We're going to talk about this. But Pee Wee had a question. Pee Wee the civilian.
Yeah. Hey, your candidacy and your campaign, can we or can I or others boil it down to say that your effort is – the part of we, the people in the Constitution that's finally going to step up and take the political atmosphere out of the politically correct?
Yeah. Will you take the atmosphere away from the politically correct?
I can 100% pledge that to you, and I'll tell you our country's not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic, and we elect constituent representatives that are responsible to the people of their district. And I will be responsible to the people of my district. I will poll them. I will come to them and ask them what they want to vote for, because it's not the politician. He's not supposed to, according to the Constitution, the elected representative does not go in there and vote on what he would like to do. He polls the district, and then he votes on behalf of what the majority of the district wants. That's not what we're getting. And, you know, Right. Regardless of personal preference, the –
Well, let me tell you this, man. I'm going to throw a quandary at you. Okay. We have a local legislator here in Nevada. His name's Jim Wheeler. And a few years ago, he got a setup question. And honestly, I like Jim, but if I would have got this question, I would have just pummeled the guy that asked it because he was being stupid. But the guy said, if your constituents wanted you to vote, you know, positively for slavery to return, would you do it? Something of that nature. And Jim said, well, they'd have to put a gun to my head, but yeah, I'd do it. I represent the people.
So let me correct you there, Boone, on something. This is where
– they were asking him a principled question. And if a guy had asked me that, I would say, stop being stupid. Obviously, that's not even going to happen. Let's talk about something real.
There is a very easy way to answer that. The Constitution, it is a blueprint. It's not a recommendation.
It's against the Constitution.
Slavery is against the Constitution. You have a constitutional right or constitutional duty as a constituent rep to vote against that, to prevent it from happening. So there's no other way to answer that other than to say it is prevented by the Constitution. And his answer should have been absolutely not. He would never vote for that.
My dad, I brought the same question to my father. And my dad had said, I said, Dad, what would you do? He said, I don't care what my constituents want. I wouldn't do it because I'm against it. And I thought that was interesting. And so basically what my dad was saying is he would go to his constituents and say, you know what, I cannot represent you because this would be fully against anything I believe in. So you need to have somebody else represent you, which I thought was a pretty interesting perspective, too. If you do have something that is so against you and your constituents want it, don't you kind of have to bail out?
You do. And that's where, one, the first thing you would do is you wouldn't bail out on the vote. You would vote based on what the Constitution states, the blueprint of that Constitution.
Well, maybe it's not a slavery issue. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's,
no,
you know.
Anything. I mean, we could go into
taxing children for diapers. I don't know.
You could go into polarizing issues such as abortion.
Right.
I mean, you know, if your district polls it, like personally, I'm pro-life. If the district, if I poll my district and my district votes, let's say a 70-30 majority, that they want abortion to be, you know, pro-choice, I have a duty as a constitutional representative to vote pro-choice, regardless of what my personal opinion is.
And now, would you say that? I mean, as a politician, would you say, you know what, I am against this personally, but I will still vote this way?
Yeah, I'm telling you right now on public radio I would do that, and I'd have a constitutional duty to do that. And, you know, I would explain this to people. You must explain it to them. You know, I'm personally against this, but it goes back to, what does the Constitution state, and what is the Constitution, the constituent representative required to do according to that Constitution? And they're required to do, one, the very first thing is follow the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Two is to follow the lead of their constituents. And if that's what the constituents want, it would be my duty to try to convince, if it's my personal belief and I want them to be pro-life, my personal thing would be to convince and write legislation that would say, hey, you know what we need to do to fix this problem? We need to put a date on life. Is it 22 weeks? Is it 18 weeks? What is it? At this date of pregnancy, this child has a life. And if you do have an abortion, it's murder. What we don't have on the books right now, legislation, is we have nothing that establishes the date of life. And, you know, someone could argue with you and say, well, a live birth is the date of life. Well, what you have is live birth abortions, and you can look into this.
And what about the folks that say at conception?
Yeah, and that, see, my problem with that is the DNC chairman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, they asked her, what are your limitations on abortions? Are live births okay with you? And she said, my only answer will be there are no limitations. So she agrees with live birth abortions, which are murder.
Mm-hmm.
When a baby is born alive and you use a pair of scissors to chop its body up and cut its spinal cord, that is murder.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, okay.
I mean, I'd be very vocal about this.
I'm pulling you to see how you would answer questions and what separates things, because I think it would be very interesting. I've never seen a politician, and it could happen, I just haven't seen it, say, you know what, I'm going to vote this way on this issue, but I want to go on the record and say, I'm doing it for my constituents. It's not because I agree with it.
Yeah, and one of the other big things is the big, you know, the old guard system of just because you're a Republican voting for something, just because you're a Democrat voting for something, and coming together and making power plays. I mean, we as veterans have suffered greatly because of that.
Well, you know, you're right. And I'm waiting for the khaki Congress. And that means, you know, after World War II, we had the largest number of warfighters that entered the Congress. And we had the greatest our country blossomed more during that period of time than at any other time in our history. I'm looking for the khaki Congress to exist again. That means warfighters taking up, you know, close to the majority and making that. Because here's the issue. A warfighter can work with another warfighter across the aisle. Only the warfighter community can shrink the width of that political aisle and do things and put the people ahead of the party. Tipping Point, Boone Cutler. We'll be right back.